brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 13 for Thursday, January 12th, 2012, with Conor Mhuíneacháin and Michaela Nealon. Dis Marie Vigas Kid Falter Rovishtak. Hello and welcome to the technology.ie podcast. My name is Conor Mhuíneacháin in the Edgecast Media Studios, and Michaela Nealon is joining me over Skype. Hi, Michaela.
Good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon.
Will we let them in on the secret? It's evening that we're recording this time, and you're not at Black Knight HQ, you're not globetrotting around the world, you're in your house.
I'm in my house, exactly. I'm in my home office.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you something, the acoustics are pretty good, Michaela, so we might be doing more podcasts from there. It sounds good. I was going to say that later in the programme we're going to be talking to Conor O'Neill, but we've just decided actually that we're going to split up the technology.ie podcast into two parts. So we're going to delay that interview with Conor O'Neill, talking about something that's topical this week, which of course is the launch of Netflix to Ireland, and we'll come back to that. I'll ask you for your thoughts on that. But first, as we started with Keela and the music there at the start of the programme, which of course is a piece of music by Keela, which they've kindly allowed us to use for the podcast. Did I see you tweet in Irish this morning, Michaela?
You did, and it's not so. And I got several tweets back from people going, "Oh my God, what's happening?"
One person, Chris Byrne, said that you must have been hanging out with me too much.
I said, "Yeah, well, you know, next thing you'll be speaking Italian."
That's right.
Yeah, no, it's. It was one of these things. I like Keela's music. I mean, it wasn't coincidental that we ended up using their music on this. And you know, the to and fro and back and forth with them about getting the rights to use the music was absolutely fantastic. It was great. It was a wonderful experience. And I'm signed up to their newsletter. And they sent one out there the other day. And down the very bottom of the email, I mean, this show's actually read it all the way through, which is rare for me, I suppose. They have this little phrase in Irish. Now, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
Oh, go on.
All right. Nine nil ein kulu san solicht.
Sauliacht. How do you pronounce it? Sauliacht. Nil ein kulu sa sauliacht.
Yeah, which means there's no recession in imagination.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, that's a fantastic little phrase.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's great. Because I think one of the things that we're all finding at the moment is that there's this kind of grey cloud floating over the country, possibly even floating over the entire European Union and the world. And, you know, there's all this kind of doom and gloom, and everybody's upset about not having money and companies going out of business and everything else. And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, that's a really nice positive thought.
Mm. There's no recession in imagination. Is that a new song or a new album title by Keela? Or?
No, I think that's
just a sentiment.
Just a little sentiment they threw in, but they are actually going into studio very soon to record a new album. So excellent. I'll be looking forward to that one. And as soon as they announce an actual release date, I'll probably place a pre-order on their website, which is Keela.ie. That's Keila.ie. Fantastic group. I absolutely love their music.
I think when we were talking to Colin, I don't know if we mentioned this or not, asking him to perhaps join us on the programme at some stage. Maybe we will, because it's always interesting to get, we've had novelists, we've had all kinds of people on the show. It's always interesting to get the perspective of different types of people from different walks of life when it comes to technology.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I think the thing is, you know, you look at a group like Keela, they've been around for donkey's years. I mean, I remember seeing them live in... actually, it was the first time I think I saw them was in the WOMAD Festival or something like that years ago.
Right. That's Peter, you know, Gabriel's thing, isn't it? WOMAD.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the thing is, like, they're on Facebook. They're posting videos which are, you know, completely spontaneous. I mean, this isn't kind of like gone off and into a big expensive studio. This is the kind of stuff of, you know, somebody's just happened to either use a camera. Phone type video or something like that, you know, amateur stuff of, you know, various members of the group just playing around with music and having a bit of fun. And I think that's, you know, it's great. And they can do that online. They can do that on the internet. They can't do that. They couldn't do that 20 years ago.
We'll definitely return to it. I think the arts online or something, and when it comes to technology and the way people can engage directly with their audience now, is something that's very interesting indeed. We'll move on, Michaela. The other thing I was talking to you recently about is you've unwrapped, unboxed and begun playing with your latest toy, which is a Kindle.
Yes, I have. And I've even started spending money on the damn thing.
What are you buying? Books, I presume?
I've downloaded a load of free content.
Right.
It was a lot of the works, you know, like Shakespeare,
yes,
Oscar Wilde, a lot of those things, because they're out of copyright.
Mm.
There's versions of those available for the Kindle, which don't cost anything. So you
they are, and they're in the iBook store and that as well. It's you know, you can get all these classics in the public domain.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, I downloaded The Happy Prince and Other Tales by Oscar Wilde. I've got Shakespeare's sonnets. Mm. But I also went off and I bought a book on, you know, content. How to create killer blogs, podcasts, videos, ebooks, webinars, and more.
Wow.
Engage customers and ignite your business. That's some hell of a mouthful of a title. But the thing is this, Con, is I've always been one of these people who liked the smell of books, that liked the physical touch of books. And even though I am very much an e-citizen in many respects, I was very slow to move towards a Kindle. Mm. It was one of those things, was like, no, I want a physical book. I like the touch, like the feel, like the smell. But you know what happened to me? It's like I had the Steve Jobs biography with me when I went over to DC there a couple of months ago, and it's a great big lump of dead tree.
Yes.
And so I had to lug that book all the way from here via Paris all the way to DC, and it's just, if I'd had the Kindle, I'd have had this much neater little device with, you know, perfectly legible text and everything else. And you know, it's got all these little things like annotations and hyperlinks and all sorts of other wonderful little things with it. And I could have carried that book and a whole load of other things with me and just practically shoved it in my coat pocket.
So you gave in, you said it's time to try it. You've had it for a few days now. Will you go back to paper and dead trees?
I think there's no reason why I can't do both. You know, there's no reason why I can't do both. Because, I mean, the other thing is that, unfortunately, and this is something that I'd say quite a few people have probably noticed, is that some titles are more expensive on the Kindle than they are in ye old dead tree versions.
Really?
So, yeah, it's kind of bizarre, because if you go on to Amazon, you do look up for a particular title. Like, I was looking for Kevin Mitnick or whatever his name is.
Mitnick, yeah.
Well, he's got a book out. Well, he's got several, but his most recent book is out, and one of my friends recommended it, and I wanted to get a copy of it, and I thought, yeah, this is great. With my Kindle, I'll be able to download it, but it's not available for the Kindle.
Right.
Yeah. And then other titles, they might be available for the Kindle, but the Kindle edition might cost you $10 or $11, whereas you could pick up a paperback version for, you know, half that.
Mm.
So, you know, I think I can see myself getting certain things on the Kindle because either I want them immediately or I know that it's going to be a great big lump of a book and I don't particularly want to carry it with me. So if I'm going on the road, maybe I'll just, you know, download a bunch of books to put on the Kindle and pay for it, rather than having to lug a stack of paperbacks and hardbacks around in my hand luggage.
Leaving aside your experience as a user, Michaela, you mentioned to me last week that you had got, among your Christmas presents, was a biography of Jeff Bezos of Amazon. Has being a Kindle user increased your admiration of Amazon's business strategy when you see what this actually does in terms of actually delivering digital content and having the opportunity? It's so convenient to buy, really, isn't it? It's no wonder that Amazon's ebook sales were up 600% in the last quarter of 2011.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Amazon is I've always felt that Amazon were an interesting company, and the strategy they had, you know, let's, you know, become the premier destination for books, and then, you know, they expanded that out onto a whole range of other goods and services.
Mm.
And, you know, they were able to do that without having to worry about making a profit, which you're kind of there as somebody who runs a business, I'm kind of going, oh my God, you know, why and how, oh wow. You know, it's quite a scary proposition. And, you know, the biography was an interesting read. I didn't think it was particularly well written, but I was just so fascinated by Bezos and, you know, the entire, how Amazon came to be what it is today, that I was able to, you know, struggle through the clumsy prose. And it's a book which I think, you know, I'd recommend to people to read if they're interested in finding out a bit more about the man behind Amazon. But if you're looking for something as engaging and possibly as controversial as what you get with the Steve Jobs biography, you're going to be disappointed.
Okay. Let's move on, Michaela. There's a big event happening tomorrow. Today, of course, as we publish the podcast on Thursday the 12th, ICANN are opening the application window for new generic TLDs. Tomorrow is the big day.
It's a very exciting day, I think, for a lot of people. Though, of course, the flip side is that, you know, for you and for me, in many respects, it won't change anything. And that's the kind of the funny side of it. It's, you know, for some of us, it's obviously important. And, you know, somebody like me, I've been tracking it very closely. But it could mark a big change in the internet as we know it. I mean, at the moment, .com is practically the only game in town. In the future, you could have a whole range of other domain extensions available for people to register. And it'll be, and I wrote a blog post today for the company blog, trying to explain as simply as possible, you know, what it all means and what it doesn't mean. And, you know, that's the other side of it as well, is that a lot of the media coverage over the last few months probably gives people the impression that anybody who wants to register and get their own extension can do so. And that's not the reality. Not that simple at all.
That's a pretty good blog post, Michaela, and we'll put a link to it as well on technology.ie. You've done it in a Q&A style, basically, and saying you're answering some of those questions. Can anyone have their own top-level domain? The answer is yes, but not just anyone. You've got to have some serious credibility. You've got to apply, and you've got to demonstrate that you're going to be able to actually handle the responsibility.
And the money.
And the money.
Don't forget the money.
There's $1 million. Is that a fee, or is it something you have to? Do you have to produce a letter from your bank manager or something like that?
Well, the $1 million figure that I threw out there is a combination of things. It's $185,000 US to apply for a domain for a top level extension of your own. So let's say, for example, if I wanted our company Black Knight to have .blackknight, we would have to fork out $185,000. And that's the one-time application fee. But then there's an annual fee that you have to pay to ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation of Assigned Names and Numbers. I mean, they're basically the overseers of all the domains, and they also interact with numbers, so IP addresses and all that. But you'd also have to contract with some entity of some kind to run the back-end operations. In other words, you know, running the plumbing of this. And that's going to run to probably $20,000-$30,000 a year. And having an extension is all fine and good, but if it fails, if you go out of business, what happens to all those domain names? So there's also a consideration there for the kind of contingency plan aspect of it. You know, what happens if? I mean, there's, you know, somebody else might take over your domain extension, but if your domain extension has failed, if you're trying to sell domains and nobody wants to buy them, it's going to be quite hard to find somebody else to pick it up, because, I mean, why would they? So, you know, the $1 million figure there, I don't think it's that unrealistic. Obviously, if you were applying for 3 or 4 different extensions, then you could probably spread some of those costs out a little bit. It wouldn't be like $1 million per extension.
Yeah. But I'm looking, you've listed some of the ones that have been mooted and that people have been talking about. Included in that list is .irish. Who's behind that?
.irish, the company is registered in the US, but there are a number of Irish investors and entities involved with it, as well as some Irish Americans and various others.
I'm looking at the website here. The Global Irish Diaspora is the headline. Irish represents a brand, a culture, but most importantly, a dispersed people, one that has developed over hundreds of years. The .irish campaign is a new way to employ the synergy and common identity shared by these people, over 75 million worldwide, dwelling in the Republic of Ireland, United Kingdom, United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and mainland Europe, and indeed further afield as well. When will we see the first of these domains begin to appear?
I would think that we might see, and again, this is maybe if, but I honestly can't say with any security or certainty, maybe in 2013 at some point.
Interesting.
Maybe. Oh, but it could be 2014. I mean, the other side to it as well is, and it's something I think, you know, that's, it's worth mentioning, is that there are certain groups and entities who are really, really strongly and vehemently opposed to this entire thing. I mean, there's certain trademark holders, IP lawyers, who think that expanding into these top-level domains means that, you know, for big brand owners, they're going to have to spend a lot of money registering domains that they don't want.
Okay.
There's also a lot of fear, and I mean, it's FUD in many respects, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Indeed.
The next big date for us is going to be May, when the initial list of applications is going to be published by ICANN.
So is there going to be a dot black knight in that list? No?
I can tell us that at this point. No.
All right.
And I mean, you know, the thing is this, ultimately, sure, you know, when stuff starts coming out and into the public domain, you might see either my name or the company name or both names associated with several applications. Mm. I mean, we're obviously talking to a lot of different organizations that are planning to launch their own domain extensions. And we're going to be involved with several of them in some way, shape or form. But we're not going to, I can't see any value for us as a company to go for a dot black knight. Now, you ask me, would a dot Disney be of any value? And then I'd go, yes, definitely.
Something I want to talk to you about, we've been talking about a number of services and that Black Knight provide, Michele. I've taken your advice and got myself a cloud server, one of your new cloud hosting packages, and it's part of my New Year resolution that we talked about last week. I'm going to try and be a better geek, be a better webmaster. I could have gone for a new shared hosting package or something else that you do, but we said we'll just get the hands a little bit dirty, not actual hardware. We're using a virtual server in this case. But I'll ask you a little bit about that in a few minutes. But first, I want to talk to you about the Black Knight sale. That's on at the moment. Remind us again what kind of discounts you're giving.
Well, we're giving up to 40% discount on some things. I mean, we've done lots of promotions in the past, you know, on our entry-level hosting plan, on .ie domains, on .coms, on .mes. And, you know, that's great, and I think some people enjoy those discounts. But what we decided for the January sale was, let's have a look at some of those things that we haven't been running many promotions on. And let's see if we can get people interested in trying out things like a bit of our business email hosting. So we're offering discounts on the business email hosting, which is Microsoft Exchange. And we're also offering discounts on SharePoint services and also on BlackBerry Enterprise. There's discounts as well on domain registrations, on domain transfers, and on our Medius and Maximus shared hosting plans. But I think what's kind of exciting for me is just to see if people are going to take up some of the offers on things like the business email.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Technology.ie with Conor Muinichon and Michele Nealon. We're tinkering a little bit with the format for the new year. We decided that we would make things lighter, looser and a little bit more frequent as well. We're going to continue to have weekly guest interviews, and the next one of those is an interview with software developer Conor O'Neill. But he's going to be talking to us in particular in relation to the launch of Netflix in Ireland. That interview, though, isn't going to be in this podcast. We're going to hold it over until next Monday, and we'll have those guest interviews released on Mondays on technology.ie from now on. The main program itself going out every Thursday. Before we get into my adventures in the cloud, Michele, I bought one of the cloud servers from Black Knight the other night, and I've been playing around with it. My plan is to build it up, basically get a domains working on it, get a website working on it, more as a practical exercise than anything else. There isn't a particular site that I'm working on with it. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But first of all, did you try out Netflix?
Yes.
And what did you think?
It's an interesting service. I think it's going to be quite disruptive. Mm. And I hope it's going to be disruptive.
There was all this excitement on Monday, and then it was kind of followed by disappointment when people looked in and saw that the selection wasn't quite as wide as they had hoped.
Well, this is the problem. Okay, you know, based on what we know about licensing and everything else, you kind of go, yeah, okay. They're going to have licensing restrictions. They have to cut deals with various content providers, movie studios, distributors and all that.
And what do you expect for $6.99 a month anyway?
Well, Yes and no. But I mean, I think part of it is that there was a lot of hype around it.
Yes.
And so, you know, Sunday night, I think Damien Mully posted on Facebook that the Netflix website was up and running for Ireland. Mm. And, you know, they're offering a free 1 month trial. So, of course, I signed up, and within a couple of minutes, I had it enabled on my Apple TV. And then the following evening, I installed the new application for my Xbox 360. So I've got it on my Apple TV, I've got it on the Xbox 360, and of course I've got it on, you know, my laptop or iMac or whatever. The big disappointment for me was the new releases, because let's be frank, they're not new. They're actually pretty damn old. I mean, you might find the odd little gem in there, like some of the independent films that you might find difficulty picking up in your local Extravision or whatever. But the choice of films isn't exactly amazing. When it comes to TV programs, this is a first, because iTunes in Ireland doesn't offer TV shows. So even if you wanted to pay for them, you couldn't. Hmm. So there's a number of TV shows in there, like there's Dexter, there's Scrubs, there's a whole load of other ones in there. But again, it kind of falls short slightly, because Dexter's had 5 seasons, they've only got 2.
Yeah.
Scrubs had 8. I'm not too sure how many Scrubs seasons are available on there. I didn't bother checking. But, you know, the thing is, it's like, it's kind of, it's not quite there in terms of the content.
No, but I suppose for Ireland, in terms of what is available here, the fact that iTunes hasn't had TV programs up until now, it is a step forward from our point of view, and it's a welcome addition, would you say?
Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's one of these things, like, you know, it's only $6.99 a month. I mean, $6.99 a month. Let's put that into perspective. Renting a new release or even a catalogue title on iTunes in Ireland is going to cost you $3.99 or something like that. That's a single title.
Yeah.
A lot of us who have Sky probably have extra packages and things with that. So for us, for example, I mean, well, for me, I'm paying probably €60 a month, maybe, to Sky for Sky Movies and with Sky HD. And some people I've spoken to, you know, they might have subscribed to various services like the Sky things, and they might cut back on the package, because for $6.99 a month, you can get access to a whole load of films. I mean, maybe they're not new releases, but there's still quite a few films. There's a good choice in amongst the older titles. They're also carrying titles that would probably be too risque for iTunes. I mean, iTunes doesn't have an entire category dedicated to lesbian and gay films, just as a random example.
Which there is in this. It's interesting, and we did also discuss, this was the main part of the interview I've recorded earlier on today with Conor O'Neill, which we'll publish on Monday on technology.ie. He and I coming at it from a similar perspective, and it turned out that we've both cut the cord recently when it came to Sky and Sky Plus, and so this is a kind of a welcome addition, really, at this stage. Conor is further along in terms of his work with Freesat and Serview and Media Center and things like that, but that forms mostly what we were talking about. And the other thing that he and I noticed was that while an adult may look at the catalogue and say, well, nothing new there, nothing of much recent currency or anything like that there, the kids don't really mind whether it's a 5-year-old cartoon or a 2-year-old cartoon that they're watching. And in fact, on the blog post that I had put on technology.ie the other night, I've put a picture up of my kids engrossed in SpongeBob SquarePants less than 2 minutes, 3 minutes after I'd actually begun my sign up. So from that point of view, I can tell you there are 3 little fans here in this house.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, somebody like me, I'm probably not your typical consumer when it comes to films. I mean, I've got 2 iTunes accounts. I've got Sky with every single movie package imaginable. Yeah. And if I ever posted a photo of my sitting room, you'd see the stacks practically going floor to ceiling of DVDs, Blu-rays, and even HD DVD. I import titles from, you know, all of the Amazons, because I can't get them off Amazon UK. I'll get them off Amazon France or even Amazon Germany. So, you know, I'm probably not typical in that respect. So my my requirements, my needs, my expectations are obviously going to be very, very different to somebody else's. I mean, I'm very conscious of that.
Well, that's, I mean, that's what it's about too. I mean, it's about giving people the choice. And I think we've been compared to people in the States and even in Britain, we've been, I think, relatively underserved in relation to that. So it's nice to see that we're sort of in the front row, at least for once, in terms of new releases and things like that. And again, I said this when we were talking to Connor, we're inviting people as well to share their thoughts in relation to Netflix and in relation to hacking home entertainment. It's one of my austerity technology themes for 2012 that I'm going to be returning to again and again on the blog, Michele. Finally, and before we go, the other thing I was hoping to do, as I say, is be a better webmaster this year, Michele. So we discussed this last week and I said, right, let's get one of these virtual servers. It's a Linux box I've got, or a virtual Linux box. Of course, it doesn't exist in any real sense, but then in every sense that matters, if you're contacting a server over the internet, it doesn't matter whether it's real or virtual. And but you've also got Windows servers, I noticed as well. There's a Windows Server 2008 offering.
Yeah, depending on what you want to do, people will choose either Linux or Windows.
Right. and I noticed a whole range of Linux. There was a LAMP Linux server. There was other kinds of servers as well. Really, this is for sysadmins. This is for people who know exactly what it is that they want to get. And so you're selling packages that are configured with different software setups depending on what people want.
Well, yeah. I mean, There's different types of usage. I mean, one of the things is, okay, you've got the Linux versus Windows. Right? So if you're developing an ASP.NET, you need to use Windows. I mean, you can't do it on Linux.
Simple as that. It's ASP or PHP. It's Linux or Windows. These are your choices.
It's not that simple anymore.
No.
Because Microsoft worked very, very closely with the PHP developers. So now PHP support in Windows actually really, really good.
All right.
I mean, it used to be one of those things where, you know, getting PHP to run on Windows involved, you know, dancing naked under a full moon and various incantations. Whereas these days, it works really, really well.
What do people go for, Michele? What are your customers going for in terms of virtual servers or even real
anything
servers?
Anything and everything. Anything and everything. Because you see, the thing is, when you look at, let's say, looking at the Linux distros, you know, we're offering a wide choice of them because, well, they're available, so we might as well. You know, it's one of those things. It's like it's the long tail thing that, you know, infinite choice, and people will still choose things that they actually want. I mean, some people are very comfortable with, you know, Debian-style Linux distributions. Others prefer Red Hat-based ones. Is there any real difference between the two? I mean, ultimately, no. I mean, it's like saying that, okay, I use a Mac. I don't use Windows. Yet I'm talking to you across Skype. Skype's available on both. I mean, who cares? It works. I'm more comfortable with a Mac these days than I am with Windows. And it's the same when it comes to servers. I mean, there's certain things that you can only run on Windows. There's certain things you can only run on Linux. So, like, Linux gives you a shell prompt. You can write scripts in Bash. You can run the certain programming languages that probably work slightly better on Linux, and there's other ones that work better on Windows. And, you know, there's different ways of accessing things. Like on a Windows machine, you can use a remote desktop. So it's like connecting into a server located in a data center, in our case up in Dublin, and it's an extension of your desktop wherever you happen to be. But, I mean, it depends on what you want to do. And I think, you know, the thing with the cloud stuff is that instead of having tied to the resources of a physical machine, like you buy a server with 2 gigabytes of RAM, it has 2 gigabytes of RAM. That's it. It can't have any more than 2 gigabytes of RAM because that's all the RAM that's in it. Mm. Whereas if you get a cloud machine and you order it with 2 gigabytes of RAM and you want to add an extra 2 gigabytes or whatever, up to, you know, a much, much larger number, it's simply a matter of upgrading it and maybe just restarting it. That's it. And, you know, within a couple of minutes, boom, it's upgraded. You don't need to go along, you know, unplug things, start taking stuff out of motherboards and messing around with things. You can just upgrade. You want more disk space. Same thing. You might need to restart your virtual server. You definitely don't need to take the damn thing apart and start messing around with screwdrivers.
No. Now, the server I've got, it's a Linux server, and it is. I can log in over SSH. I can use PuTTY on my Windows laptop here, for example, and I can log into that and get a command line and run scripts and stuff like that. It's an actual machine to all intents and purposes from that point of view, but it's also comes with something called Plesk, and you advised me to make sure I got Plesk. What is Plesk, Michele?
Plesk is a control panel. It's used by a lot of hosting companies and, you know, resellers of hosting companies, web developers, web designers, and it's basically a nice graphical front end to the server. So,
it's a web interface to managing an awful lot of the resources, or pretty much, would you say, all of the resources on the server?
Most of them. There's one or two things that you might need to, you know, get into on a command line and do. But most things you can actually do via the web interface. So, like, you can upgrade packages and, you know, stuff that's already installed in there. You can install extra bits of software all using, you know, a web browser. You don't need to have any extra special tools or anything like that. And you just, you know, follow the instructions on screen, click, 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 you know. Practically instant gratification. It's a nice bit of software. It works pretty well. There's a number of control panels out there that people use for running hosting. I mean, there's cPanel, there's Plesk, there was Helm, that's now gone. There's DirectAdmin. I think Ensem is still around. And all of these bits of software, all they're actually doing is they're giving you an easy to use, user friendly front end to managing things. So you could give somebody access to, you know, their hosting account with some kind of control panel. I mean, it's what we do with our shared hosting. It's what all of our competitors would do. It just means that, you know, you as the end user, you have control over things without having to go off and study to be a sysadmin.
Now, when I was setting it up, Michele, it asked me to assign or to choose a domain name to use with it. In fact, it comes with a Plesk license for up to 10 domain names that I can use, the domains that I can use with it. So I could serve up to 10 different websites or 10 different domains, I should say, on that virtual server, on that cloud server, without upgrading the Plesk license.
Yeah, I mean the thing with Plesk is it's designed primarily for people who want to offer some kind of service to others. I mean, you could use it just for one or two of your own domain names and just run that way, because, you know, you might find that shared hosting is a little bit too restrictive, or, you know, there's something that you want to do that you can't do easily on shared. Mm. But with the Plesk, it means that, say, in your case, let's say you might have set up a website and maybe some email for one of your clients or friends or relatives or whatever. It means, you know, you can give them enough resources so they can do whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. And you can give them their own login. So if they want to log in and set up a new email address, they don't have to ring you up and ask you to do it.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's pretty cost effective. I mean, you know, It's not expensive. Let's face it. I mean, it's more expensive than shared, but not ridiculously expensive.
Well, it's interesting, and it's more of this is an academic exercise, really, more than anything else that we're doing at the moment. I've assigned one particular .com domain name, but actually, I haven't. I haven't pointed that domain name yet to that IP address. So that'll be another day's work with DNS and stuff like that.
You should be able to do it directly from your hosting control panel. I mean,
all right.
Like, if you have any domain name that you have registered with ourselves that's available through our main control panel, cp.blackknight.com, you can change the DNS records for that. So what you might have to do is create new records or disable existing ones or edit the existing ones. Mm. But it's not that hard to do. It's just a matter of, like I say about anything involving IT, you know, read the messages on screen.
Indeed.
I mean, if it says, you know, from the drop down, create new record, and you can create like an A record, a C name. And maybe at some point we should go through, you know, what these different DNS Records are, and I suppose actually there's a blog post on each right for the blog.
There is a blog post in it. In fact, I'm pretty sure that there's might be even some kind of knowledge base or support article on your site or someplace that I've read. I've read it loads of times, and the problem is that I keep forgetting it, Michaela. But we'll come back to it again. But as I say, it's brand new. I only bought this two nights ago and played around just a little with it. But it's something we'll dip into perhaps every week on the show and just see how I'm getting on. We'll work all the way up literally towards getting a website or a blog, making sure that it's managed properly, making sure that we keep our contact management system up to date, making sure that we integrate sufficiently well with social media and plugins and all the kinds of things that really get the best out of a site, and of course SEO, and making sure that we're doing that. Oh yes, and ads, Michele. If we're going putting websites up, we may as well make some money on them.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's like there's no reason why you can't make back some of your costs.
With AdSense and things like that. That's something I've been looking into as well, so I'll be looking for your advice and guidance on that. More than we can discuss in one programme, Michele, but we will come back to it again.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the thing is this, I mean, there's no reason why you can't make back what you're spending. There's no reason for that. There's no reason why you can't do that at all. If you're producing good content, there's no reason why you can't monetize it.
I mean, I'm going to write that down.
It's not about selling out. This is just practicality.
I'm going to write that down. I've heard you say that before to me, Michele, and I'm going to write that down. You've got to be, you ought to be able to pay for the costs in relation to a website. So we're going to try and see if that's something we can put into effect, maybe as a project for 2012. Michele, as always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for taking the trouble to join with us on the podcast this evening. We're going to publish this Thursday, January 12th. And also this week, we've recorded an interview with Conor O'Neill, as I said, in relation to Netflix and hacking home entertainment. That'll be published on Monday, and indeed from now on for the rest of the year we'll be publishing our guest interviews on Mondays as well. You can hear myself and Michele here every Thursday. Good evening, Chéadur Ella Marshin, Slán go fóill, Slán Michele. Let's hear your Irish again there.
Slán con.
Slán Mahan Fair. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Con.